And welcome back to Cinema Vino. Our month of monsters continues, even though we've hit a small snag. Unbeknownst to me when I put that poll on Instagram, Young Frankenstein is not available anywhere on the internet. You can't rent it digitally, you can't buy it, you can't stream it on Hulu, Max, anywhere. I mean, it is. You can buy a physical copy of it on Amazon, a Blu-ray or DVD. That is the only way you can watch it, which strikes me as very strange because it was a big hit back in its day. So we need to figure out why it's not available and reach out to whoever should have it and let them know that they need to get it out there. So that can be one of our projects. But that threw us off for a full week. So we're going to do a special repeat episode now of our coverage of Fright Night. So another monster movie. And then we'll get back right into it with Young Frankenstein next week. And then conclude the series with Godzilla King of the Monsters from 1956 with Raymond Burr. And then after that, we've got a really cool lineup of comedies. Each comedy occurs on 2004, 94, 84, 74, 64. So they're all anniversary year comedies. So it's good stuff. There's a good lineup of stuff coming. So without further ado, enjoy this discussion that we had of the movie Fright Night.
It's gonna wait you.
Oh yeah. Okay. Hello.
That was fun.
I may edit that. I may not. I may leave that in. I don't know. Strong.
I'm sweaty. Always leave that.
Welcome back to Cinema Vino. We're already 1 minute into this podcast. So this is part three of our Halloween series. We're welcoming back Sean Jordan for this particular episode.
He
is back. Hope you had a good anniversary celebration.
Oh, I was going to ask where I went last week. But.
Yeah, we just cut to the chase on that one.
He was sitting at home putting on the old Cisco CD.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we figure honesty is the best policy. It's like, or as George Carlin said, dishonesty is the second best policy. So, yeah. We're going to talk about Fright Night. This is a Travis all-time favorite movie.
Yes.
It's a cult classic. And it should be a Halloween staple for a lot of people. If it's not, it should be.
Yeah.
So, a little background on this film. It came out in 1985, August 2nd, which is my wife's birthday.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Stars Chris Sarandon as Jerry Dandridge, which is a great name for a, you know, vampire, I think. So yeah, he's a handsome, suave vampire, moves into suburbia next door to a horror geek named Charlie Brewster, as played by William Ragsdale. Ragsdale figures out pretty quickly that a vampire has moved in next door when they start doing all sorts of vampire shit. And so he determines to expose Dandridge, but he struggles to do so. So he turns to a horror TV host named Peter Vincent, as played by Roddy McDowall, who's a veteran character actor and all kinds of stuff. A lot of people might know him from Planet of the Apes. He was one of the apes.
Was he Dr. Zaius? No. Yeah,
he was... No, I don't think he was. He was one of the guys.
Though. Yeah,
I didn't recognize him because he wasn't dressed as an ape.
Exactly, it's a little tricky.
I would watch this entire film again if he was.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's true of most films, though.
Fright Night.
Yeah, I would watch like The Firm, but everybody's apes.
Yeah.
So this film grossed $26 million at the box office. So it was a decent sized hit, but it's since got a lot bigger on home video.
It was the second biggest horror movie that year after Freddy 2. Second?
Nice.
Freddy Nightmare on Elm Street, yeah.
Part 2, yeah. And I'll let Travis talk about that. It does feature like a lot of the classic vampire powers and abilities and weaknesses and stuff. And vampires are a big thing for Trav. And so I'll let him discuss that. But first we'll start with Tay. What'd you think?
And so, have you seen it before?
Yeah. So I think I had said that I hadn't seen these movies before.
I think I had you watch it.
Yeah.
I think we watched it.
And it was like after I had seen it, I was like, you know what? Damn it. I have watched this. But it was great to revisit it. But I don't remember much of it. Most likely was alcohol induced watching, which this one was as well. I actually really fucking liked this film. I didn't really know what to expect, but then after watching, I'm like, oh, I kind of remember some of these scenes. But I love a film, and again, I'm sure, and I never know what these films were going for in 1985.
Yeah.
Was it trying to be dead serious? Was it just like, this is a horror film? Or, you know, added with comedy to it. I never know what they were trying to go for.
I think there was some comedy.
Yeah, yeah, it was like, well, yeah. His little friend, Evil.
Evil Ed.
That motherfucker maybe ruined the film for me.
Yeah, he's like, so terrible.
I know, I was like, God damn. I was like, that might be the only negative thing is that, like, that kid was just over the top. And I don't know if he was supposed to be there to, like, hate, to be like, oh, man, this guy sucks. Yeah. You know, I hope he gets his. Yeah. It's his comeuppance. But I did love Darcy. Or Marcy from
Mary Children's.
Yeah, I'm glad that she was in it. I actually, again, I loved the whole thing. They didn't waste any fucking time. They jumped into it. I did love all the vampire powers, everything. There were some of the scenes were very, very long. I did watch this with my partner. Her name is Bailey. But I did watch it, and it was an hour 45-minute film.
Yeah.
There were some scenes that made it feel like it was a 2 hour and 45 minute film.
Which ones were long? You said that over text, and I was like, all right, sweet.
So the one that I thought was super long was when he was already invited into the house, and he came in, and when he first was like, hey, Charlie, you know, you gotta stop coming to my house. As I, you know, get it out. He was like, no, I'm not doing that. He's like, okay, well, I'm going to kill you. And so then he like puts him out the window. And that's when you first see his face. And look, I get it. You want to show it everything. You want to show it. But I'm like, how many times is he going to look at his face and then cut back to Charlie, who's near the window? Oh, we're going back to the face. And I was like, I get it. The makeup was awesome.
Yeah,
why I was
where
like,
they did the transition.
What is happening right now? So that kind of went on for a little too long. The alleyway scene kind of, to me, went on a little bit where Evil finally got his comeuppance, or so he thought. And then it was the scene, which, again, I don't know how woke this scene was. Was when, what was the vampire's name?
Jerry. Dandridge.
Kind of was, you know, or in the club, in Duck Club, when he was putting the moves on that young, she's in high school.
Yeah.
And he was grabbing her booty cheeks. I was like, okay, hold on. And everyone's okay with this. But then when they got back to his house, for like the final scene and everything, that seemed to drag on for a while. Where it was like, hey, she's back here. I love her. I'm going, I want her, you know, to be mine forever. I was like, oh my God. It was probably just those two scenes, really.
Okay.
But it was like, maybe three.
Her hair grew so much.
And that's, I know. I was like, wait a minute. So you get bit and like your hair just grows?
Yeah,
I was like,
sign me up.
Yeah.
Vampire seduction on a dance floor gives you hair boners. And also increases your bust size.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And your makeup.
Hashtag hair boners.
And, But I did love it. I don't know. There's just, overall, that film was just absolutely phenomenal. There's a few things to nitpick, but it's 1985, and it was a great. I wasn't a huge fan of the acting of his minion.
I love that though. The sidekick.
Oh my God, I didn't mind it, but he needed to be in it.
What are you doing here, kid?
And like how he always like cut him off or would get right behind him or right next to him and kind of gave the look. I'm like,
yeah.
I was like, I don't know if this guy's a Catholic priest or not, but like you can't get people those eyes, man. I was like, them diddling eyes. And I was like, you got it. I was like, you can't, because every time he just got so close to him, like, what is this?
Yeah. It was the '80s. Eye contact was different back then.
Yeah, diddling eyes were a thing.
But
that was just standard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, and I guess Travis, I'll have to refer to you later, but what was he? Was he a vampire? His minion?
No, he was a
familiar, wasn't he?
Thrall?
Yeah, they never exactly say, and it was only in like some like a D&D third party book later that I was like, "Oh, they made up something for what he is." He was just kind of, because I guess he was had been alive the whole time when the painting of Amy was done before, because Dandridge was like, oh, she looks just like the other gal, do you remember? He was like, oh yeah, I do. So I, whatever he is, he's a daytime servant.
It's usually really common for vampires to have like a human assistant that's mm-hmm. been like seduced. I mean, that's pretty common. That from like Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Renfield.
Yeah, Renfield was like the first one that went over there, and then he came back crazy and mm-hmm. was like, I love Dracula.
But it, yeah, it's rare that you see one that they've had for like years.
Well, and he had enhanced powers, so he was filled with green ooze apparently.
Yeah. It's like he had strength, he had green ooze, and so it was like, what was he?
What are you?
Yeah.
But besides that, the film was awesome.
All I can think of is that sometimes vampires give like, you know, their minions blood from them, so they're people. So I guess that dude is just super old.
That's how they keep him on retainer.
Dead.
Yeah.
And whatever taking a white picket fence to the heart undid that.
Yeah.
No clue.
Yeah.
Sean, what do you think?
I, you know, the thing that really sticks out to me for this era specifically was the use of practical effects.
I love it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
cool. Like I the transitions that. To being a vampire when Evil Ed turns into a vampire and then turns back, like, and kind of like melts back into a human.
Yeah.
So cool. Just like, you know, everything from like the faces melting and like the fingers just disintegrating down to bone and just like bones being all that's left and just like scattering across the floor. Super awesome. Yeah.
So far, all of our Halloween movies have been big on practical effects.
Yes.
Tremors, yeah. Aliens, and this. Yeah. It's like.
And 13 Ghosts.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
And it's like, we love our Halloween movies to have practical effects.
Yeah. You know, this reminded me a lot of American Werewolf in London.
Oh, yeah.
Which the transitions to werewolf in that movie were so mm-hmm. cool for the time that it was like this amazing practical effects. This reminded me a lot of that with like the fingers extending and becoming longer. Mm-hmm. I mean, less cool was like the weird like extra digit finger on the vampire, on Jerry.
Yeah.
Like that was uncomfortable because he just sort of had like extra long fingers that just moved around.
It's a bit much.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
It's where the movie went digital.
Jeez. And the American Werewolf on London is exactly what I thought of when I thought of Ed after he got staked and
yeah,
we're doing
yeah,
that whole, yeah. Like again, that was a long scene, but it seems like every time they do that, they're because they spent $1 million on special effects or practical effects for the vampires on this, which was obviously in 85 a big deal, so they were like really wanted to showcase all that, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't remember what year American Werewolf in London came out.
81, 82, somewhere in there.
Yeah,
right. Before this, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that was like the first, like, that was the big one. But yeah, this one, really great use of practical effects, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah.
Like Taylor said, it kind of dragged on a little bit. You mm-hmm. know, there were some scenes that probably went way too long. The amount of smoke that came out of that gun.
I know.
Prop gun.
Yeah. Filled the room up.
Yeah. It created a smoke screen for the assistant guy. Yeah. Just like, they shot him like six times.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there's just this wall of smoke now for no reason. And then he just sort of walks through and they're like, oh, I can't believe it. It's like, how smoky is this gun?
Yeah. You got to think the director's like, more smoke. No, more smoke.
Have you ever seen a gun? More smoke.
Directed by Tom Holland, by the way.
Who went on to play Spider-Man later.
Yeah. Not Tom Holland, but yeah.
And the main character, the guy, he's someone who went on to do absolutely nothing. I don't know if you looked at his IMDb.
William Ragsdale?
Mm-hmm. But I don't think he was in anything at all.
He was in the second Fright Night, and I recognize him from one or two other things.
You talk about the remake, the 2006 remake?
No. There was one in 1989. They did a sequel to this.
Was it called Fright Nights?
Nope. Fright Night Part 2. And it had Roddy McDowall and William Ragsdale. Both came back. I think they were the only two.
Well, and I think I do think a lot of the actors from this movie came back in the remake, the 2006.
They pop up.
2006, 2011.
No, it was 20. Might have been 2011, but yeah, it was Chris Sarandon came back, and maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know who else.
Well, and I definitely saw that remake. Not memorable. I don't remember anything about it.
Yeah.
I was going to say that I have it written down here that Evil Ed is one of the most obnoxious sidekicks in horror movie history.
He's the worst.
And I had that it also has terrific creature effects for the budget and for the era. So we're of one mind on that.
Yeah.
Apparently a direct sequel to this movie is now being made. So with the same original director.
Is now being made?
Is currently being made.
Yeah. Well, they were They were going to make a third one, but it's unclear if that's actually happening now. Mm-hmm. I know the director is doing a comic book, which is coming out next month. So
Tom Holland is?
Yeah, Tom Holland. This might be his script for it. It's coming out next month. But I don't know if he's actually going to be, you know, I know the rights reverted to him in like 2019, 2020.
Yeah.
Huh. And he was going to try to do something.
Neat.
No clue.
So Travis is a vampire fan. How closely does this movie, what's the word, hue to the vampire, like traditional vampire powers?
So this, what I realized after, like, because I'm a big vampire movie fan, and for me, there's, every time you see a vampire movie, they come up with their own rules. They're like, what? Silver? Silver doesn't do shit to vampires. You've been watching too many movies, mm-hmm. you know, watching or reading too many books or something. To me, this takes off all of the boxes on everything, because it shows them, you know, being closer to the Dracula vampire, where he turns into a bat, where they turn into a wolf, and then it's not clear, but I guess he turns into a mist when he's chasing Ed down the alleyway.
Yeah.
And then they're, you know, showing his super strength, where Charlie spends all that time nailing down the window, and he just with one finger flips the whole thing up. And of course they do the old trope where the vampire like grabs the protagonist by the throat and then like lifts him off the ground and then turns around and then throws him
like they're nothing.
Yeah, just like, hey,
that is a classic,
just so
move.
Everybody knows I'm super strong. And then
the cross not working unless you're a true believer, I thought that was something that's been kind of used off and on,
yeah,
in vampire mm-hmm. vampirology.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that they use it as like a redemption arc for what's his name,
Roddy McDowell, Peter
yeah.
Vincent.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Two things I noted watching this movie. I think, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Law and Order, but I think this movie soundtrack had the same bass player, because it has that same slap bass of like
that was every soundtrack in the 80s.
This was actually the score was by Brad Fidel, who was from Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the synth soundtrack.
And really, I've been waiting all day to bust out that Law and Order style bass of like bow, bow,
bow, bow. Can you hit us with a Seinfeld real quick?
I wish I could, but Locken is like
yeah. So the movie, Todd, did you have any other thoughts?
I mean, I it's to me, it's like what Taylor was saying. It's like, it's a fun movie. You know, it's like I interpreted it, and maybe this is not what they intended, but it's a fun, like goofy horror movie.
Yeah.
Where it's supposed to be not taken seriously.
But, you know, and you said that you spent $1 million on the, you know,
effects,
like in 85, like I was very impressed. And that's mm-hmm. why I understand why they put such a long time on those scenes. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to me, a good Halloween movie is all about like checking out your brain and just going with it and just having a good time and enjoying the effects and enjoying the getting into the story, you know, the vampires and all that, you know, the general goofiness of it. You know, you just have to kind of buy into it and go along for the ride. And I think that's true of all of our movies that we've done.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So I enjoyed it a lot.
So the film starts out by making fun of vampire films, because you have the whole, you know, would you like to come out here on the veranda, and they have the whole the kissing noises as they're panning to the house, and you're like, what the fuck is going on? And you're like, oh, they're watching a movie. So they're already making fun of you know, spoofing vampire films of yesteryear, and kind of specifically the Hammer vampire films, and kind of poking at Peter Vincent's kind of like Peter Cushing.
Every time I hear the word veranda, I think of the Three Amigos, where it's like the yes. girl's like, yeah. Maybe we could kiss yeah. on the veranda. And he's like, my lips are fine.
Yeah. Exactly. I was thinking the same thing. And then, you have the good old Billy Bob host of a horror TV show, which Grandpa Munster, that actor from that series back in the day, he used to have one of those.
Al Lewis,
fuck yeah.
Yeah.
So I used to watch those all the time. So as soon as I saw this, I'm like, oh, yeah, all right. They're spoofing Peter Cushing as an Al Lewis in this. It was just interesting, the way they went with it.
Very meta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, the reason Jerry Dandridge is eating apples and fruit all the time,
I noticed that,
is because what's his name? Chris Sarandon did his research and was like, ooh, I think my vampire has a little bit of fruit bat in him. So I want to be eating fruit. That's okay.
That's unexpected.
That's a choice.
Interesting.
Because I was going to, I meant to ask you when I saw that, do vampires eat? Do they need to eat?
Normally, no.
Do they have a stomach?
Or they can, and they just vomit the food later. And so I don't know if this vampire poops or not. You have to ask him.
Yeah,
that's a messy coffin.
Which apples keep you regular? So there you go.
But yeah, the other thing, he's at the very beginning when he's putting the coffin in his basement, you see his henchman lifting it up, and he's just there with the one hand. So it's. You know, just little things.
Doesn't even need the henchman. It seems superfluous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. True.
Just one handed the entire time.
Yeah. But I do like that they say, on the newscast, they're all these bodies have been found and they've been decapitated, which if they don't want to have their, victims turn into vampires, you gotta, chop off their heads. So I was like, oh, that's a lovely detail.
Yeah. Also, that lady of the night that showed up at his house was attractive.
They always, a good horror movie always needs boobs.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
you always.
I think it was more of a butt scene.
The first one.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay.
When she gets out of the taxi and she's just like. Mm-hmm. Is this house? And he's like, no, that's
and,
the door. Sashays away.
You need cursing, gore, and you need nudity.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the nudity scene went on a little too long as well. I mean, I wasn't upset with it, but yeah, that one kind of went on just a little.
I mean, I would say in
the
80s.
Lingered.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cameraman lingered. I would say in the 80s, nudity was a trope of horror.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it that Charlie immediately went to the police, because every time you are see a horror film, you're like, why don't they fucking go get the cops? Why don't they do anything like that?
Yeah.
So he immediately does it, and he later calls them later, and they don't believe him, so they think he's fucking around. The mom in this is a great character, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Judy Brewster.
Heavy sleeper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sleeper.
Yeah.
And then
and thirsty.
Let's see.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and then the old the vampire trope that the hero's girlfriend always looks like the vampire's lost love.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah, this is a Bram Stoker.
Yeah.
Thing, mm-hmm. wasn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it wasn't in the book, but it's been adapted to film a lot. Done that. And then there's always somebody that lists off the ways to fight the vampire.
Oh, the rules. It's like gremlins. You got the rules.
What I thought was interesting is that the vampire gave Charlie an out to forget about him.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, I can kill you now, or you could just forget about me. You have a choice that I never had. You know, forget about me. I'll leave you alone.
That was a cool scene.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very nice of him.
Yeah.
Charlie fucked that up.
Yeah.
And then, when he finally goes to talk to Peter Vincent to try and get his help, they make film commentary on films of the day that all teenagers want to watch is demented madmen running around in ski masks, hacking up young mm-hmm. virgins, which I'm guessing is mostly Jason and Friday the 13th.
Everything all of that time period.
Yep. Charlie has a lot of people that stare at him intensely before driving away. That, look a little too long. It happens at least three times, but
it's the Dylan eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Dylan eyes are a thing in the 80s.
Yeah. Police Chief Guy wasn't in this movie for long, but he wanted to make sure that his face was in there.
Yeah.
And he was the dude that was, I think, one of the air traffic controllers in Die Hard 2.
Die Hard 2.
He was.
Yep, he was. Yep.
Yeah.
It was interesting. The Jerry Dandridge had all the cuckoo clocks in his house to remind him, when it was time to wake up.
That was super cool.
Which has to get really that can't work well with daylight saving time.
Right? Yeah, that's why he's got the henchmen to go adjust all the clocks.
All the clocks.
Turn them all.
He will spring forward.
It's time to fall back.
My other nerdery, I like that they allude to his super senses and hearing all the time, and you never see a good vampire doing good coffin maintenance. He and Billy are down in the basement, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, I think she just woke up to try and kill Charlie. And then he looks up again and was like, oh, I think we have a guest. But they're with their little shovels and trowels putting together their coffin.
Did they say that his coffin locks from the inside?
Yeah, I think so, because I think
that's nifty.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Vincent had to hack it, because mostly vampires can turn into mist and just hop in their coffin.
Sure.
Yeah. They're cool.
Classic move. Yeah. You know, turn into mist.
Oh, yeah. I already said vampire dances make your hair sexier. That's coffin maintenance. And then, last thing I had in my notes was Peter Vincent, after he kills Evil Ed, grabs the stake and then takes it out. And then oftentimes you have to leave the stake in a vampire to then like cut off their head, do whatever else. But he removed it. And then at the end, you saw the eyes in the house next door and you hear the, "Are you so cool, Brewster?" I'm just saying, Evil Ed, probably still alive.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But if you kill the parent vampire, doesn't that?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Normally it should. It's like the Night King in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's also, I think that's also werewolf lore, is you have to kill the werewolf that infected you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To defect yourself.
Ooh. Two things for me. I just now put together in my brain that Peter Vincent is a play on Peter Cushing and Vincent Price. I'm a little slow on the uptake on that one.
Vincent Price was originally supposed to play this role.
Yeah.
Oh, and the last thing I forgot is this is clearly a takeoff of Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window, where the dude gets his leg broken and is stuck looking out the window, sees a murder happen next door, or thinks, and then is trying to convince everybody. So they just took that nugget and they're like, what if the murder was a vampire? Boom, go.
Also, I just lost my thing. Am I the only one? I know this is an early viral video, but every time I heard Charlie's name, that I thought, you know, Charlie,
bit my
come
finger.
To Canyon Mountain, Charlie. You know, the freaking...
The
unicorns?
Yes.
Oh, I was thinking of Charlie Bit My Finger.
That too.
Llamas?
But I was thinking of the Candy Mountain. Llamas? So I know that might have been just me, but I heard that throughout that entire movie. Every time his name was mentioned, like, Charlie.
Also, one of the puppets in this was originally going to be used in Ghostbusters, the first Ghostbusters film. But and I thought it was a little like Evil Amy's like fucking Jaws face near the end, but I guess that wasn't it. It was something about the bat that he turns into, or the bat at the end, the skeleton bat that he
turns into. It's like attacking him.
Or the skeleton bat that he's exploding at the end. Which that was cool. The green flame, by the way, reminded me of Game of Thrones, Wildfire.
Yeah.
Good shit.
Yeah. Are we ever going to be able to go back and watch Game of Thrones again?
No.
No.
No, you can watch the Battle of Blackwater Bay. You can watch the Battle of Hardhome. You can watch the wagon train, you know.
The Battle of the Bastards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a horse pile up.
Yeah.
Be a good band name.
Horse pile up.
Horse pile up.
So scale 1 to 10, what do we give Fright Night? We'll start with Sean.
7. I grade horror movies on a different scale than other movies.
Yeah,
I mean, if you just grade this against everything else, it's like probably a 5.5, but it's a 7. It's a horror movie. It's fun. Turn your brain off.
Yeah,
for me as a vampire film, this is like 9.5. Normal, I would say a solid 7. Yeah. It again, it's like Tremors for me. It's no Shakespeare, but I fucking love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, not seeing this maybe twice, first time, having no idea, 7 easily. If not for me, because I thought it was just a fun film that I could easily rewatch.
Yeah.
Maybe even a 7.5. It was I like because, so but also just from like from where it. When it was done, and like honestly, I think 7.5. Fuck. Yeah,
I think so
it was a good.
I think it's 7.5. I mean, because it's like obviously, like you said, it's like Halloween movies aren't going to be Shakespeare.
Exactly.
But that's just sheer, you know, straightforward entertainment value. It's that ability to just tune into it and have fun.
Mm-hmm. It had everything. Yeah.
Fright Night does that.
And Evil Ed, later in life, I think went on to star in a couple porns.
Good for him.
Did he?
Yeah.
With that voice?
Well, wow. you're not exactly using your voice for that.
Yeah.
And that's not how the actor actually sounds all the time.
You would hope not. Yeah. Sweet Jesus.
Oh. Can you imagine, though?
Yeah. My
God. Yeah.
Yeah, because that was a fork going down a chalkboard.
Christopher Mintz-Plasse in the remake of this played Evil Ed in that one. And Anton Yelchin played Charlie Brewer.
Charlie. Mm-hmm. And Colin Farrell did a great job, at, I thought, as the Chris Sarandon. He's a good, that's a good casting choice. Mm-hmm.
And Toni Collette was the mom in that. It was, and Imogen Poots was Amy. I think the first film I saw her. So, and David Tennant was Peter Vincent.
Yeah.
It was,
that's a great cast.
Yeah, it was very well cast. It was not as great as the original.
You can't touch the nostalgia.
Yeah, it relied way too much on CGI at the time. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was written by one of the writers for Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And one of the interesting things was they were like, oh, well, if, you know, the vampire can't come inside your house if you don't invite him. And instead, the vampire just went and cut the gas line and then set it on fire and like blew up the house and they had to run outside.
Yeah.
But the problem with the remake was they set it in a small suburban town in near Vegas. And so it was just a small little area. It didn't really, the thing that was great about this film is that there were only really a few sets and it mostly took place on Charlie's block. Mm-hmm. Like you had some like little scene at the school and one at the restaurant club. The club, but mostly it was at his house or
Live that like their house is in like a suburban area and then you go not that long ago and you're like, oh, you're in an alley in the middle of like a city. Like you're in like a like club now. Like what?
That's called a studio back lot.
Also, Jerry had a sweet Jeep and Charlie's red and gray painted
Mustang.
Yeah.
Sweet looking too.
Yeah.
That was a great Mustang.
That's a great use of primer, you know, to keep those keep that rust out.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, this has been another episode of Cinema Vino. This is continuing our Halloween series.
Last thing I will say, Fright Night Part 2 is available on YouTube in Blu-ray quality in full. So,
Are there commercials?
No. YouTube.
Good.
Wait, YouTube has commercials.
Oh, jinx. I think it's illegally on YouTube, so no commercials.
I will touch in here that we are drinking delicious beer.
Oh, yeah. For
this podcast. This is an Imperial IPA by Rogue. This is called the Colossal Clod. I've always loved Rogue beers. Sometimes I feel like they slip under the radar. People don't talk about Rogue enough. I mean, the dead guy gets some attention, but they have a lot of really good beers. They are out of Oregon, and so my wife and I have been up there and sampled their beers, and it's just good stuff. This is a big, brawny, hoppy IPA. I have 75 IBUs, 8.2% alcohol by volume. So it's a big, fun IPA. But it does have a what appears to be a Loch Ness monster on the can. So it kind of fits our monster theme, kind of fits our Halloween. So
I think it's more of a sea serpent.
Well, yes.
But be sure to drink your Ovaltine. A crummy commercial.
I was looking around for wines that fit Halloween, but I think some of the most Halloween themed things I found were beer. Beer seemed to have a lot more monsters and stuff on the cans and bottles. So I decided to go with the beer for this time. So just good times by all. Anyway, tune in next time. We are going to talk about 13 Ghosts, the 2001 remake. That's going to be the next thing with Tony Shalhoub.
Shan Elizabeth.
And Shan Elizabeth.
Yep.
Really an all-star cast.
Matthew Lillard.
All-star cast.
Yeah. And Matthew Lillard.
The guy that played Salieri as well.
Exactly. So we will see you guys next time.
Bye.
Not with a bang, but with a whimper.
You can listen, rate, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Our website is at cinemavino.net, and reviews of these movies can be found at toddwoffordmovies.com.
You can listen, rate, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. At toddwoffordmovies.com. Thank you.